The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
I'm joined now in studio by Randall Plunkett, whose book is in my hand, Wild Thing is the name of it, Finding Hope and a Home in the Natural World. Randall inherited the title of Baron Dunsany alongside with 1,600 acres of an estate as well in just his late 20s. Randall, you're very welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
When people, if you meet somebody and you're making small talk at a bus stop or what have you, what do you tell them you do when they say, what do you do for a living?
Well, normally I'm a very posh about it. I say, well, I'm a nature conservationist and a filmmaker.
Okay.
And yeah, no, sometimes people introduce me as this or Lord or Baron or whatever. And that's always weird because, you know, I'm from Ireland. First name, like, you know, yeah. I don't ride a white pony or anything like that. And, you know, I work for a living.
So let's explore the nature conservation element, because that's a lot of the focus of the book, obviously. And I guess that's where you've got a bit of notoriety in recent years. For people, though, who don't know, tell us a little bit about what you've done with the estate.
So it's a very strange thing, because places like mine, they don't exist anymore. It comes from a different era. And, you know, they're in decline, most of them. And my family has always been really involved locally. You know, we had we were very prominent here throughout the time. Like most estates like mine, where the landlords were absent, we weren't. We were always very much involved in our society. And the thing is that a place like mine, traditionally, it's agriculture, you know, and it's beef. And my grandfather used to boast having 1,000 head of cattle in the place. Now, the problem is I was not very country. You know, I walked around in a black leather jacket and I wanted boots and I wanted to go to rock concerts. The last thing I wanted to do was go out in the fields. So you can imagine that was difficult to spend my teenage years listening to Slayer, wanting to go to rock concerts. Meanwhile, all I could see was woodlands, and it was lovely. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, it was lonely. And, so when I took over, we started, I began to go through this process of, should we say, focusing on things of the past. Because when you spend your whole time looking after old places, you think about history a lot.
Yeah.
And you think about why people do the things that they do. And also what you're going to do. Because there's one of the lessons that my family has always said is, their privilege isn't free. It's nice, but it ain't free. And you have to do something with it, and you have to do something worthwhile for your time. You know, in the past, Horace Plunkett, which is a relative of mine, he built, over 1,000 schools, because education was the route to freedom, actually. And, you know, and now we have education. The government pays for that, somewhat. But our big problem for this generation was the environment. Now, I'm one of those people who, I've always had difficulties at everything I do. Like, I was dyslexic, bottom of the class, could barely write my own name. In fact, I still have handwriting of a 12-year-old. But what am I going to do? What was I going to do with all this benefit, with all this privilege? I could live life as a bourgeoisie, or I could do something that has value. And I thought, what is the problem? Environment is our big struggle this generation.
And is this something that you began to explore in your late 20s when you came back to the estate? Or was it something you'd thought about even into your late teens and as you grew up?
No. Okay. I had no interest for nature.
It was suddenly this thing was landed on your lap and you had to interrogate yourself, was it? And what you wanted to do with it.
Do you know what's funny? If you see a place, you sometimes lose sight of it if you live in a place for too long. And I suppose I had always considered my responsibilities as something negative. And it's only as time went on, I began to, if you like, see something, a different aspect to it. And it's almost as if the land whispered to me, because, you know, I'm tone deaf, and I can tell you that a lot of women in my life will tell you that I don't listen. And the reality of it is, and I'm sure I didn't listen to nature either, but eventually nature did whisper in my ear, and I had a crazy idea that I had to fight for. Because don't get me wrong, this idea that later turned into rewilding was going to cost us. We lost 25% of our income. And I was doing it almost because I had seen something and I didn't even have a name for it. And I just, it was like an impulse that I felt I needed to do something, and I didn't know what. I didn't know the difference between an oak tree and a beech tree, but I had this instinct.
And what was there pushback then? Because you were taking this land, I guess, that was arable land, and that's hence the drop in income. Were there people in the estate who said, this is madness, Randall. What are you doing?
There were...
That is a fine field, and look at the price of beef.
There were very few people who didn't have something to say about that. Let's just say that.
Be harder now. The price of beef has gone through the roof.
Well, I'm a vegetarian, so I'm okay. Yeah, my tofu is a good fixed price at Lidl. But the thing is, no, it was terrible. And the thing is, what you have to understand is that I come from a family of, you know, back in the old days, there were things like the hunts and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
No. We were something... Like Dunsany has to be a symbol of benefit. It has to be, you know, inclusion. That was the big thing for me. So, you know, we cannot protect nature if we're destroying parts of it. We can't pick and choose. So we became an animal sanctuary, and nature has to be taken in all its glory and all its negative. You have to love it. And some things, I think people tend to pick their favorites. Oh, I like oak trees, but I don't like these trees. Or I like deer, but I don't like foxes. No. So we made a big decision that every animal was welcome, and we were trying our best to be a symbol of what we wanted, the world we want to live in. And I want to live in a green world. So the reality of it is nature had to come back, and we went on this journey, and nature came back. Because where I used to walk out my door and I'd only hear crows, and I used to say it's like the crows waiting for me to die, suddenly I got birdsong. Suddenly, from having no animals, there were pine martens, there were sparrowhawks, there were red kites. It was like yearly I was seeing new animals. Last year, we had red salmon. Haven't had red salmon in 75 years in my place. And, you know, and that's the thing. We were the first place in County Meath to have woodpeckers in 100 years.
Yeah.
And it came to us. Because the reality of it is, this thing that I discovered, which, let's be honest, it became sort of like my religion. Yeah. Because from having no interest in nature to living with nature, and now my whole life is dedicated to protecting nature, even when it's unpopular.
And the implication, I think, you know, in the description, rewilding, is that you just stand back and you do nothing and let nature take its course, as it were. To what extent is that true, or how much of it is actually managed? You know, unconscious. You mentioned deer there, for example. I mean, there's no apex predator to kill them if we have too many.
Sure. So, couple of questions there.
There is an apex predator. It's us. But, how do you manage the rewilding?
So, I throughout, and you'll see this in the book, if you read it, or you get a... ebook, or you rob it, or whatever, as ChatGPT will tell you. But one of the things that was interesting, because I had no idea exactly what would happen, because that was a problem. I'm vegan, so I can't kill things. But I do have a problem. I have deer. So what's funny is, you know, everybody told me deer destroy trees. Well, they did.
Yeah.
But gradually, as time went on, I started noticing that the regeneration of the forest was increasing, and the deer numbers were increasing. So I had tripled the deer numbers. And in fact, something really strange happened, and a few years in, the deer started attacking all the invasive species. It's almost as if nature itself said, right, we're beginning to recover, and we're going to use nature's own mechanisms to start rebalancing. Because one of the things that makes this little project different than some of the others is I believe in something called the adaption process.
Okay.
And the adaption is, you know, you're a fit kind of guy. So I presume you go to the gym. You go to the gym, you hit the bench, for example. Mm. You lift some weights. You're sore the next day. You rest, you recover. But basically what you're doing is you're overstressing the nervous system, right? But you have to have that excessive stress for the body to grow and to adapt. Now we look at it at nature. Nature has to be the same. If you stress nature because the imbalance of nature happens, like you remove elements, how does nature recover? How does nature adapt? How does nature evolve? You have to stress a system, and then it will eventually evolve. Now, I saw this attack of the deer destroying all the invasives as perhaps a potential adaption. Because does the whole world become Japanese knotweed and cherry laurel and rhododendron? Or is nature more like water, that once it finds its balance, it will find its level? You see, this is very controversial, but I've seen it with my own eyes. So, no, I don't kill deer. No, I don't do those things.
And you don't rule out the rhododendron or anything like that?
We are in decline. I have one rhododendron tree left. They've wiped them all out. And my cherry laurel, if we go by what has happened over the last few years, is in decline. So, and it's receding. So, perhaps this could stop. It could be an anomaly. You never know. This is the process. I've only been doing this for 11 years, and nature is not on my time, if you know what I mean. So, but here comes another part of it, and this is one of the reasons why this book is a little different than your typical rewilding book. We have to dare to ask questions that we've always believed to be true, because people said, when I first started this, you know what they said to me? They said, the land will be destroyed. You can't do it like that. It needs management. You know how arrogant you have to be to think that nature needs us? It's crazy that this idea that we have such a control of such a want to control things that we think that we have power over nature. We don't have power over nature at all. But what you have to do is we have to appreciate nature. And because our value systems are based on our own bias, nature doesn't have the same bias. Nature has, it's all part of it's all part of a tapestry. We are part of that tapestry. We can't be the center part of the tapestry. Where the new, and it's not about going backwards, because a lot of people presume we're trying to make things back the way they used to be and we should all be living in tents and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's not what this is. We have to look backwards for inspiration, and we have to, you know, set a course for the future.
Yeah.
And that's why with this kind of I don't like to be called a rewilder, because rewilding is so overused nowadays. I like to be called a V-wilder or a... So that's what I like to be, because it's a slightly different approach to nature. Because I think appreciation for nature, once we can accept nature for how it is, we can have changes in nature.
Well, listen, it's all contained in the book Wild Thing by Randall Plunkett. And from what it's worth, I think you're to be commended for it all, Randall, because, you know, I know we've talked about it here at this show. The level of forestation in this country, kind of native woodland in particular, is tiny compared to elsewhere in Europe. And they're not living in tents in Germany and these places where it's kind of 33% odd, or Poland and other parts of Eastern Europe in particular, where they've got, you know, huge, huge ranges of native woodland. So it is great to see people making an effort here. And thank you very much for coming into us. And we wish you the absolute best of luck with the book.
Thank you very much.
Randall Plunkett.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.